Welcome to Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole.
Hi, I'm Brandon Mole. I'm a number one New York Times bestselling author of a bunch of fantasy series like the Fablehaven series and many more.
And I'm Jason Conforto. I'm a filmmaker, a podcaster, and game designer. In this podcast, we're excited to share our love for story and our passion to create.
We hope to share a bunch of experiences and lessons learned over a lifetime in creative fields.
We have two guests with us, John Heater and Dan Heater. Thanks for joining us today, guys.
Hey, just in case people don't know, we are identical twin brothers. And since this is a visual medium, you already know that.
Yeah. So,
and you'll have no idea if there's actually two of us.
And the thing about you guys being twins is you look a lot alike, but you also sound.
I know this is going to be great for an audio.
This
medium.
Is a good practice because this might be the first podcast that we've ever guested on. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, but we have for years, and I was talking to Brandon earlier about this, is like for years we've talked about, you know, people have come to us saying, you guys should do a podcast. You guys should do a podcast about what they like listening to us talk. But we've always been worried like, dude, if we did a podcast, it might confuse people, or maybe it doesn't matter because we sound very similar. Yeah. We're our cadence, our rhythm, our timing. Maybe it will be fun for listeners to find the subtle differences. But right now, you know, good luck, Mulligans. Is that what you call your podcast followers?
Mulling It Over. Oh, yeah. What do we call the followers?
Yeah, the Mulligans, right?
The Mulligans.
That sounds good. Yeah, that's you coined it, man.
Yeah.
So, hey, Mulligans, thanks for joining us today on this show. Anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about the writing process. You guys are working on a show together. That might be a little premature to call it a show, but tell us a little bit about the project the you guys idea. Are working on. Yeah.
Well, Dan and I, you know, are just a little bit of our background. I mean, we both grew up, our kind of main shtick, like throughout our entire childhood, was we were really into art. We were really into drawing, sketching, illustration, and everybody, we knew it and everybody else knew it. Like, it just became kind of our title, like in elementary school, middle school, high school, if you're like the Heater twins, they're the artists. They love to draw stuff. They're good at it. And so we would always, you know, we sketched characters, we did monsters,
it was definitely monsters, it's like monsters, creatures, characters. It's like, you know, you would see other kids doodling in their sketchbooks, whether it was like, you know, cars or helicopters, or it'd always be some sort of robots. And were always doing monsters, creatures and stuff like that.
Now, John, did you do for Napoleon Dynamite, did you do the art?
Nice segue, Jason.
Yeah,
all nice of segue. The yes, no, that's yes, I did do the art, and there's a little bit of history to that.
Like, are we talking? That's the type of monsters we're talking about, or was it different? Than
yes,
that?
Different style, mm-hmm. But definitely that idea. Like when you know when I read the script, and Jared Hess who wrote the script, and I said, this is weird, Jared, because I was like, do you have someone doing these drawings? Because I want to do this because I could do this because I know the look you're looking for. It's very specific. It's got to be crappy, but look like they've put some work and effort into it. Anyways, but the liger itself, the concept of the liger, because he's like, well, there are such things as actual ligers. But what I want you to draw is like kind of a mythical version. Like he's got magic skills. He's got a spiked tail. And I was like, dude, my senior year or junior year of high school, I was like, I literally have a drawing called The Lion Beast that was super detailed, super like, it was good. And it was like in the school publication. I was like, this is so like what I used to draw, this kind of, at least the content of the subject matter. Mm-hmm. But mine was much better back in the day where I did this in like 20 minutes and made it look, well, I spent more
purposely
time
trying to make look a little bit more bush league and a little bit more like it was done by a 13-year-old kid. Right. Yeah.
But it was the same kind of, same kind of subject matter.
Yeah. I know, Brandon, you kind of had the same childhood, except for instead of drawing it out, it was like coming up with characters and stories. And
well, here's the thing. I had that same childhood and I would also draw, but I couldn't draw. You know what I mean? So for me, if
should have outsourced or something.
If you needed me for Napoleon Dynamite, it would have been just like, do the very best you can and it'll be exactly right. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's why we could have had probably any of the cast members do the drawings and it would have looked just as crappy. But it was, I was like, no, I want it to be me. But
it worked because there was something about it that felt sincere. Like I think the whole thing with Napoleon Dynamite that made it work was everybody felt sincere and like, cause it's one thing to be cheesy on purpose,
yeah.
but it's totally another thing. If there feels like there's some earnestness behind it, that's what makes it truly funny. is their heart was in it a little bit.
Well, it was all drawn from real stuff and even those people like Jared and I, sure. We came from that world and a lot of the crew and a lot of the creative people involved knew like either knew the actual people that these characters were based on, or at least knew the world where that came from and like, oh, I get this reference. Yeah. But anybody else who was outside of that world that we brought in, some of the other actors, Uncle Rico, Pedro, who didn't grow up in that kind of world, they still caught on very quickly to the vibe, what we were trying to do. And they're like, oh, I get it. These are all like kind of real people. So that's how everybody did it. We played it close to the heart, played it dramatically, knowing that, hey, this is weird, but you know, but it's real. We want to make it as real as possible.
Yeah. For me, that type of old school monster art reminds me of the, and I know you guys aren't like huge Dungeons and Dragons guys, but like,
which is weird. Cause you would think that that seems right up our alley.
Yeah. And totally disappointed. Right. But if you get the old D&D manuals, like all the art is just black and white. It feels like it was drawn by.
Ooh, that was one of our big inspirations. Segue. Actually, yeah, a little segue on that is Peter Laird, Kevin Eastman, the guys who created Ninja Turtles.
Oh,
Teenage
yeah.
Mutant
oh,
Ninja wow. Turtles. They had a book called The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness. I believe that was the book. And it was their version of it. It was their D&D. It was their role-playing book. And I remember, it was our first introduction to anything like that kind of role playing where it had all these characters, all these drawings of creatures, sometimes hybrid, sometimes
mutated.
It was always a mutated.
Very much in the same camp as Ninja Turtles. Like, oh, they made these guys first, but then they started letting their creative juices flow.
Oh, yeah. And they didn't have, like, we had no experience with RPGs or role playing and stuff like that. But we would just thumb through this book and it was all the artwork.
I get so much more inspired by that type of art than I do by, like, if you look through the D&D manuals now, it's so glossy. It's so like pristine and it feels almost like, it just feels like fluff.
Like maybe too perfect and maybe out of reach for me to draw.
For sure out of reach, but not out of reach for you to type into a computer and have AI draw for you, right? Like it feels like that's what you're getting
Then, you know, a lot of the classic D&D art was barbarians with perfect bodies, ripped muscles, beautiful women, more realistic. Whereas this book that he's referring to was right up our alley. It was animals, monsters, mutants. Creatures, mutants. We're like, they're mucky and they're dirty. They're sketched dirty.
They're not always even like drawn to perfect scale. You know what I mean? Like the muscles, the musculature was always sometimes maybe a little off, but that was like part of the charm of it. Like if you've seen some of the earliest Ninja Turtle comics, they're, you know, it's not like these perfectly drawn figures. And it was like, oh, there was something really cool about that.
So what type of, I know you're really early on your show, you're writing it now. Tell me a little bit about the show that you're doing, how much you're able to share, and just, I want to get a kind of sense of where you're at.
So the best background on that is like 3 years ago, I started, and I can't go deep into the crypto world, but this is where it starts because I have a good friend, him and his cousin, they were deep kind of in the crypto world and Web3. I don't even know if that's a term people know.
I know. Web3.0. If you're trying to get answers from Brandon and I on that,
or looking around the room.
You're talking to the wrong crowd.
Yeah, no, you're talking to the wrong guys. We don't know anything about it.
But you know
what? The Mulligans NFT, know about this.
Yeah, the Mulligans. Do you at least know what an NFT is?
That is the, it's the art version of crypto,
The non-fungible token.
People would, and there was a lot of these projects that were, and they still are around, but a lot of these projects where these artists would come up with these kind of randomly generated artwork that was created by a person, not AI. I mean, some of it was AI, a lot of it was just humans, you know, creating artwork, but you would do it where you'd create all these assets, different arms and different faces, different noses, whatever it was, and it would randomly generate. So it would create this kind of like baseball card pack collectible aspect to it.
Almost so like Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah, so there was a rarity.
Yeah, a little bit like
and,
that.
And whenever they create these, there's a there's a rarity table that would come out with each of these so that collectors could be like, okay, this is an ultra rare. We're going to start trading. And we buy this and then we sell it for more. And it's all connected to the original creator. So every time a piece of artwork was sold and resold and resold, they would get a cut of it. Anyways, these guys, buddies were like, we want to get in on this. We need someone who knows art. He came to me. And so it just became.
So you were drawing NFTs for.
So yeah, well, that's kind of where it started. I was like, all right, I don't know anything about the NFT world. I don't know anything about Web3 or crypto, but I like to draw and I haven't done it in a long time. I mean, you know, Dan and I both studied animation and continued our art.
So just going back to that, Dan and John and I were all in film school at BYU together years ago. And then midway through that process, as soon as the animation department opened up,
there wasn't an animation department currently at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were both in film school.
Yeah.
For I think a couple of years, maybe a year and a half. Yeah. And then they had just developed an animation program. And we're like, ooh, let's hop over there. Because we knew we wanted to be in film, storytelling. We were into art. And we was like, oh, this is something that we
kind of perfect blend of all that.
This is something that we can actually get a job in.
Right.
Rather than just saying, yeah, we're just going to go out to Hollywood and direct, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, this was something we could do. And so then we kind of took that track.
And we kind of, you know, our paths separated a little bit after Napoleon.
Napoleon went
down the acting career. Acting, and Dan continued his career getting into animation.
I was animating. I'm currently actually a pre-vis artist right now, pre-visualization. And I mean, I guess.
Now, the Mulligans don't know about pre-visualization. Okay. So they might.
It's just a quick sum up is that I'm basically creating, designing, choreographing action sequences for films, mostly features. Sometimes, you know, do commercials here and there, but we kind of make a computer animated version of the movie or a sequence before they actually shoot it. So it's really, really good for, you know, producers and the production to kind of know what their budget's going to be for visual effects and stuff like that.
And they know exactly what to shoot.
Exactly.
Because it's storyboards.
But just a souped up because storyboards are, you know, two dimensional.
Right.
They can only take you so far, but when you're like in a 3D space and you want to be able to see where the camera's going to be flying around.
And you're doing this at the highest level. Like you're working on Marvel films and.
Yeah. Some of my credits include like the last couple of Avengers movies, some Captain America movies. And so, yes,
you're doing.
It was a lot of fun. I love doing that stuff.
So he goes down that path and I, you know, for years I was always like, well, you know, I love acting and it's essentially kind of doing what I wanted to do in animation which was bringing characters to life.
Right.
And acting, I mean, in animation school, they encouraged all the students like go take acting classes because that's what you're doing. You're bringing these characters to life. But, you know, I just had been out of the art world for a long time and I wanted to get back into illustration, drawing. So I was like, yeah, let's do this. So. And
you've been estranged from your twin brother that you hate. And you're like, we can repair.
Exactly. Well, and I was like, all right, so I'm going to do this. And I kind of made a little bit of a connection to, it's a very, I want to say a meager connection to Napoleon Dynamite because instead of ligers, we did Tigons.
Oh, nice.
Tigons.
It's literally just the other two words.
Yeah, it's really
together.
Just the word, but we're like, I create. So I did this art project. You can look it up.
And Tigons are real things too.
Tigons are also real.
What is the difference? Like
ligers are male lions and female tigers. Tigons are male tigers, female lions.
And you're talking about their parents.
That's when they are hybridized. That's what you get. So I made this whole, this just small project of Tigons, which was just artwork and kind of Napoleon-esque drawings really meant to look crusty. And my buddy who was just like, hey, look, we'll just do this, get it out there. You've got a name. There's some recognition there. But if, you know, this is a platform, if you really like this and find the beginning seed for a story, it could be for a comic book. It could be for a TV show, whatever this, you know, use this as a launch pad. And I didn't really take it seriously at first, but the more I drew and then the fans, the people who were collecting these were like, we want some lore. Give us some backstory.
I know. And that was like the first mission was
these have to turn into characters.
Yeah. How do we turn this into a story, a mythology, you know, a lore that's going to go along with these guys.
So it was around that time I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring Dan in on this mm-hmm. because what I want to do with this is I kind of wrote like this essay that was the like just off one night, kind of the closest thing to lore I could come up with, these weird Tygon creatures. It's set in space. It's like,
are these like humanoid at all? Are they like,
well, they are now. The ones I was drawing, were not the humanoid. NFTs, but then I wrote this lore because the NFT, the art there was just, it's kind of nonsense. There's mm-hmm. no,
it looks like
kind
of almost like big bobbleheads, you know, like the heads are like oversized, comical.
But when I started to do this, I was like, you know what? I started to get feelings of, and I started reminiscing on like the past of like, especially like our freshman year of high schools when Dan and I was kind of the end of our real art contributions when we were trying to create characters, doing a lot of drawing. Cause then a lot of the rest of high school was spent making movies.
Oh, man.
We loved making videos and our drawing was still going on, but we kind of put down the pen a little bit and picked up the camera. So then I was like, dude, Dan, I mean, all those characters we created when we were freshmen, a lot of it was inspired by this this book that we were talking about.
And we got to bring up Sherman probably.
Well, yeah, we can actually, that would be helpful, but we also like,
That was quite the tease and then deflection too.
We'll get to it.
But we had this idea for like a comic book we were essentially trying to create with these.
Oh, you're talking about the Blast Squad.
Blast Squad. So Blast Squad is important because it is the beginning Blast seed Squad. Of, it was basically, look, the simple version was these three, we were super into Ninja Turtles. So it was these three animal humanoid figures, a rabbit,
a frog,
and a lion.
Right.
And they were like,
what colors were they?
I don't think we had them colored.
I don't think we had like,
did they have assigned weapons?
Yeah,
at least
colored them really.
Well, yes.
Yeah. So they had weapons.
We were also, we grew up in Oregon and we were big into winter sports,
mm-hmm.
Eight ball. But we were also big into winter sports. And so remember,
they were like skiers. Snowboarders.
I remember exactly. The line was they were called the Blast Squad because they had these like guns. And they were like intergalactic warriors who were put on assignment to like take out this race of bad guys, the Nagorans.
Yes.
But the funny thing was, their choice of transportation was the lion was a skier. The rabbit was like a snowboarder.
Yeah,
but each of these things were like not quite snowboarders, designed a little bit like it was essentially snowboarding.
It was a frog.
The frog, I think, had like rocket boots or something.
Something like that.
Anyways, so then we're like, so all their adventures, they have to have like a mountain that's covered in snow in order to get around. They're very limited. They're like, all right, well, okay, the bad guys are here. Is it on a snow capped mountain? No, it's in a desert. Yeah. Well, we're screwed.
It's like the G.I. Joe snow job or whatever who has the skis and he can only.
Useless.
Yeah, useless.
Unless they're in the tundra or something like that.
Yeah.
So that was, again, kind of the seed. I was like, look, taking a note from that world, I want to develop this kind of intergalactic space mm-hmm. opera drama. These warriors create these Tygon characters that are from another planet and they have to save essentially their planet or save the universe, something.
We wanted something truly otherworldly. Because we had discussed even beforehand, we're like, are these guys going to be taking place on Earth? Like, do they take... Yeah. Is the setting on Earth with humans? Are they adventuring with them? Like, you know, Ninja Turtles, it's all set in New York and stuff. And you've got April O'Neil, you got humans, Casey Jones, all that stuff. And with ours, it's like, well, do we want to have a completely separated from that? So that was kind of part of the development.
Are you leaning into the fantasy side of it too? So it's like the fantasy.
And we
like
were very much
definitely a mix of sci-fi fantasy.
A lot of He-Man, a lot of Flash Gordon, a lot of Thundercats, a lot of all that stuff.
It was very much that like late 80s.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know about that until we started researching.
Yeah.
Thundercats.
I watched it growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Silverhawks, I like... I was like, they've got it right because they have wings, and I'm like all obsessed with wings. Well,
I think they, everything except for the guitar playing cowboy, like other than that, it was a perfect show.
I mean, the hallmark of a lot of those shows, it was that mix of the sci-fi, you know, Masters of the Universe like, you know, they're running around like medieval warriors, but then they've got laser guns or laser swords or whatever. And it's like, there's magic, there's time travel, or there's like portals, but then it's like, it's a weird mix. And same with like Thundercats.
I think it's an example of knowing your audience.
Yeah.
Right? Like, like if you knew the kids from the '80s, like give it all. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it awesome? Yeah. Okay. Then yeah. Lasers. It is.
Well, that's what, and so
a robotic neck. Yes. We'll give them a robotic neck that periscopes up and down
with minimal explanation as to how it works.
Well, and then, and so that really kind of brings us back to this Sherman. And the reason why we bring up Sherman is I feel like, well, that's part of the process that helps us that maybe could, you know,
we put ourselves, Sherman,
serve itself to this podcast because you talk about the process. We said, all right, when we embark on this journey of trying to create this backstory and create this world, and where we want to start with a comic book and move into hopefully an animated series, the rule we kind of said from the beginning, we're like, the rule that we, the unwritten rule was, what would Sherman come up with? Because we had this idea that, imagine this kid, the year's 1992 and
91, 92. Yeah. 91, early
92. 90s. This kid named Sherman is really pissed off that he has to hang out in Sunday school and is got a hold of a sister's Bible story adventures coloring book.
Prince Valiant.
Prince Valiant.
Yeah.
And he's loves to sketch and he's just drawing his own version of all these things in this coloring book. Like, all right, I'm going to give Adam, you know, Adam and Eve look kind of boring.
Let's get a claw on his hand.
I'm going to give him like a sword and Eve, I'm going to give her a bow and arrow and stuff like that. And I'm going to take all these Bible swords and make him kind of like, you know, ripped muscles and kick ass and stuff like that. So that's kind of was our rule. Like, what would he come up with? What's the kind of stuff?
What's going through that kid's mind?
You literally made up a kid named Sherman.
Yeah.
And you're funneling all your creativity through.
And it helps. It helps because a lot of times we're like, wait, let's remember what would Sherman.
Yeah. Like, is this cool? That's the wrong question. Does Sherman think this is cool?
Yeah.
Question. That's kind of like how we approach it all.
So then, I mean, that's really kind of, you know, for the last about year, we've been just trying to figure out like what, and it was hard because a lot of ideas, and I'm sure you know, like when every idea is born differently. Some people have that great idea and work backwards. They're like, okay, I've already got the mechanics of who these characters are. Whereas we were coming not even from characters or even backstory. It was really like, design. Okay.
It was almost like a style, a feel. It was one of those where it's like, okay, because like we said, we wanted to start out maybe like making it a comic book and basically a pilot episode of like a TV show. It's like, okay, that's what it's going to be. But then like, all right, well, if this is a story, what's the backstory? What's the lore? Where does it take us? So John and I spent months just kind of going over that.
We just talked. We're like, oh, this works. That. Maybe this doesn't work. It was a longer process than probably it most other writing.
Because but this is also our first time.
Yeah.
So we're kind not of like really trained. Trying to develop something deep.
Well, it's hard. I mean, Brandon's working on two books right now where one, he's creating the lore, and another one where the lore is just already done for you. Like there's a difference in the process of having to create the lore versus working within the world that you've already created.
Yeah. You're kind of like, how much am I going to be Tolkien? Right. Where I ponder the lore for so long that you can write a thick Silmarillion about the lore. You know what I mean? And how much am I just going to be discovering it and figuring it out? But for me, I love going in with some world building. I love going in kind of knowing the place. And it's such an interesting way that you guys are starting on this cartoon to be coming in with more an aesthetic than necessarily the individual characters.
Yeah.
But defining that aesthetic through a fictional Sherman is such a fun thought experiment. It's really creative. Yeah. I love it.
But it's hard.
Well, and that's actually what
our
we ran
aesthetic
into.
Keeps changing. Yeah. Like at first we're like, okay, what would Sherman do? And then Dan and I, we like, I remember there's at one point, and this point I won't divulge because it's part of the story. Sure. The back
But story. Sherman dies.
But it came up. But I came well, up
he's
with
not
like,
actually a character. I know he's not.
But I had this idea where I was like, oh, that's a really cool, like, deep mythological, like, element to this lore. Then we started going, building off of that, like, oh, we're making this almost cooler. We got to remember that these characters got to look kind of dumpy a little bit. Right. Like, let's not forget, you know, Sherman's place in all this. And like, he's still coming up with this. So it's a weird balance of between like what we truly think is cool, because we are drawing inspiration from,
right.
You think of a show like Avatar, we're always referring to Avatar because it's one of the few that we believe.
And I'm sure you're talking about the last Blue Avatar.
Sorry, not Blue Avatar. Yeah, I'm talking about Airbender. Okay. Where it's like, here's
you're talking about the live action, of course, right?
No, well, the new, yeah. No, but you know, here's a TV show that's animated, but truly created a really cool lore, a mythology that you can get behind, mm-hmm. that you can like, okay, I can see an adventure setting set in this world easily. And they could keep doing more. And so we're trying to build that, but then sometimes we're like, yeah, but it's got to feel like it's coming from the Saturday morning cartoon vibe.
Yeah,
where it's
is it gonna,
stupid too?
Do you want it to be episodic, where like consequences don't matter almost? Where like, not, well, like within the episode they matter, but like
I will say this without giving away story though, is we've kind of almost done a light, you know, treatment of the whole first season. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely like,
it's all connected.
It's all a big story. Yeah.
There is a season.
Yeah. Like, but it kind of leads
a timeline of everything.
Right. But the more we talk about it, this whole first season feels like, oh, this is more of a backstory to then what would be episodic after the events of the season.
You know, a lot of projects I've worked on or stories I've helped with, I find like sometimes the backstory ends up being more interesting than the story that you set out to tell as well, and I think it takes some courage to go like, okay, we're gonna switch to the real story, because that's the better of the stories.
And that's actually a challenging aspect of doing this, because as we've been coming up with this story, and it's funny because we talk about the characters, and a lot of times people will come up with the characters first, and we have a main cast of our like core characters.
Right.
We don't even know who they are yet. Kind of. In a way, it's like we know some ideas.
We have one main Tygon character. The others, we don't know what animal mixes they are.
We don't have names for them. We got so embroiled in the backstory and the lore. And there was some stuff we came up with that we are like loving.
Sure.
Like with the backstory, the mythology of it all. And it's like, oh, this is so cool. But we can't like put this all into the pilot. We can't
reveal
everything.
It's too much.
It's like, how do we do this? How do we parse it out a little bit at a time? Do we have like flashback episodes? How much do we show?
Or do we give the audience everything we love right away so that we know, like, especially in today's world where there's so much content and it could easily come out there. And if it doesn't interest them right away, do we play our best card right away? And then hopefully we can come up with some new cards down the road.
My advice is yes.
You play the best card.
You play it right away.
Even though it's like
because sometimes
backstory that
most people
is supposed
never
to be able
have,
to reveal later on.
Most people never have the opportunity to play a card, right? Let alone a second card.
I know.
And like, if you have something that works, my advice is always lead with it, start with it, put your, and obviously you want to build and get better, but, I would,
the
I would
show start, itself you know is kind of a bit of a hybrid of the different shows this week. So we are talking about these like early 90s, you know, late 80s TV shows like Thundercats and, He-Man, Ninja Turtles. And when you look at all of those, you go back and watch those. Yeah, they were more episodic. Like you said, it's like almost from episode to episode, nothing really carried
nothing,
over.
Nothing
it always reset.
You can like put the them Simpsons in any order.
Yeah, exactly.
They visually look sometimes rad. Yeah. But what I think they were missing was some really cool opportunities at world building.
That's the difference now.
They could do it. Like when you see some of the old, when you look back and you look at Silverhawks and you look at Thundercats and just the artwork alone, you're like, dude, the artists had something going on in their mind, but then the writers were just like, all right,
making it up as they went along.
Adventure of the week. And you're like, dude, give me more.
Yeah. Well, now a lot of the, you know, these younger generations are, you know, growing up in the last Airbender, you know, generation of like, oh, it's longer form storytelling of like actually having something mapped out. when you watch something like Last Airbender, you're not watching it episode. I mean, you can, but you don't really want to watch them out of order.
Oh,
there
no.
is an that, actual that is, that lore.
There's a master plan.
Yeah.
Beginning, middle, end. And it's like, we fell in love with that because we love those shows. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how can we have that, but still have maybe some of the aesthetic, some of the kind of charm of some of those earlier shows.
You also don't want to be a show. Have you ever recommended a book or a series or something where it's like, the first two seasons aren't like, or the first two books aren't like, but it grows into and like you just want to, hit it right from
You don't want to hear it. It gets awesome later. Yeah. They're like, oh, really? Does it? Here's another thought though. Like for when you're starting it, right? If you have this awesome thing, especially if the awesome thing kind of needs to be a payoff, right? Like it needs setup to work, right? The other thing that you start with is something that's so quintessentially cool about the characters in the show, right? Like you start off in a very interesting moment where we get to see these characters doing what is their prototypically cool thing, right? Like
it's Indiana Jones, the opening scene, right?
That's a perfect example, right? Like because we start off with Indiana Jones in the middle of an awesome indie adventure,
yeah.
And we get a little mini indie adventure, and then we get the full story. And that idea of starting in with a little mini adventure of something that's prototypical of what your guys are going to be doing, that's a great hook, and that's a great way to start with something that has some punch,
yeah.
And yet you still have some stuff in reserve, you know?
Yeah. The interesting thing about the card, when Dan and I have discussed that whole idea, like, when do we reveal this? Do we reveal it ever? Is it something that we just keep in our back pocket that's just only for us? And a lot of times I'm thinking, I'm trying to come up with another card that we could lean on so that we can have that true card. All this talk about cards.
Yeah.
Like we could technically like
a double reveal
some of the backstory. We're like, we could technically make a whole series and never reveal any of that stuff. And it could be cool. And that's what I'm trying to come up with. Like, what makes it really cool without this? Cause to us, that main card is what makes it cool to us. But I'm like, I don't want it to rely on that. I want it to rely on what you see right away, the first adventure, and not having to reveal all this stuff. And maybe then do the really cool reveal at the end of the first season.
Yeah. I mean, you do. Question I mean, mark? If it's a payoffs, you can't start with a payoff.
Yeah.
Right? Like, but you can.
By definition, a payoff requires a setup.
Literally. Right? Right. Yeah.
But you want to be building towards that payoff. You don't want that first card to be like, this is the season 6 payoff. And if you can just stay with me for 5 seasons, you're going to love this, right?
Yeah.
Like how do you get it going right away? Well, good. So what's the next step for you guys? What's the plan?
Well, right now the next step is actually the artwork.
Yeah. A lot of that. We've been talking about this and going over it so much, creating this timeline with, like, I've been setting aside a lot of time and just making this entire chronological timeline of the entire, you know, mythology. It's like literally from the very beginning to the end of, like we said, possibly first season, maybe even a little into other seasons, but it's like whole timeline of the backstory, whether it's, you know, revealed in the first episode pilot, bits and pieces here and there. But now it's like, yeah, we got to have some visuals that go along with this to
we're going to try to do a comic book version, whether it's just one issue,
right.
At least of what would be the first pilot episode, kind of to hopefully sell it to some of the audience that we already have who are in on Tygons. You build, raise some money so that because ultimately Dan and I, weirdly, the two things that doesn't make sense in our youth was that we weren't into Dungeons and Dragons and we didn't read comic books really.
Oh,
I
mean, really?
No, not really. Like, I liked the idea of it. We had our older, younger brother.
So when you say you were into Ninja Turtles, it was the TV show and the toys.
Those were the actually only comic books we read.
Okay.
There's been a few here and there that we've read.
And again, I think it was because we just never cared about the sexy Marvel heroes. We are more like into the creatures and the monsters and the mutants and the weird mucky, like we love that.
Ninja Turtles definitely spoke to us when it came out.
Animals and creatures were big to us.
I got into Ninja Turtles really hard, and I know how old you guys are. And I know all three of us were too old to be into Ninja Turtles.
We had a lot of the toys. We had the turtles, sewer playset.
This will explain it was freshman year of high school when Dan and I made a 15-minute long stop motion animated Hurdle video. That was the end of probably our nerdy days. We were just coming into like, we want to make movies, but we still had our turtle toys. But we were like, dude, I mean, 15 minute long stop motion animation. It took us forever. Ended up getting lost on VHS. It's the saddest thing. Oh my gosh. Where is
it? We're still trying to find it. It's
epic masterpiece.
But we were still like, no, we were, I mean.
Oh, 89? You don't understand. This was done with my dad's old, like, you know, Sony camcorder, like a
VHS where it's
And it didn't have any kind of function of being able to take a picture. We would literally set it up if we had a tripod.
Start, stop.
Like we literally press a button, start, stop, and it would take like a second of video.
Sure. No longer so then the we stop would have to record it.
We would have to record it, like, you know, transfer it to VHS in fast forward. We would have to fast forward. Otherwise, so it would like move.
Remember those fast forward lines? Those little static lines?
Yeah, it was like there was a couple of them.
Every stop motion we made had those lines on it. We couldn't get rid of those lines.
Because we didn't know how to do it otherwise. Otherwise, if you didn't play it, record it in fast forward,
right.
It would just be so slow and choppy.
Bonk.
Even in fast forward, it was still like
it looked almost good.
Like on twos or something.
I was pretty proud of our work.
That is rad.
Oh, no, it took a lot of work.
You know what's a funny thing that you guys got me thinking about is how you, as you're developing something, right, how there are certain parts of it that are nebulous, that you don't realize are nebulous until you try to make it concrete, until you try to draw the character, until you try to write that first script. And it forces you, because you got this idea that you're so excited about, but it forces you to confront what pieces of this idea do I actually have and what pieces are still in fog, right? But and it always used to drive me crazy as a young creator because I had this awesome fog in my mind. And then when I would try to write it out, It just did no justice to this thing that in my head it was stewing in a much better way than what I could make concrete. But over time, as you force it into a concrete shape, that's when you get something you can share, right? And you're in this interesting phase of this thing as you're making it more concrete.
Well, the art side of it is where I remember, you know, all these years after graduating from BYU and having not really done a lot of illustration, the second, you know, 3 years ago when I really started creating the Tygons was the first time I really sat down for hours and hours and hours and remembering that feeling of creation when you're putting pen to paper and you're like, and for us and, you know, not being writers, but that was our main form of creativity is like, oh wow. As soon as I started drawing these and I've now, you know, I'm in the process now of coming up with the artwork of these Tygons, of at least of these characters for the show. The second you're like, you have all these ideas that you have in your mind, but then you start drawing it and the ideas start coming from different directions, things you didn't think about before. You're like, oh, whoa, this could be that. Oh, this is the kind of weapon he would use. And that weapon carries a whole history to it that you're like, ooh, there's something cool I could do there. So it's so fun. Frustrating, but really, you know, very, very fun. Very fun.
The second you make something concrete, the second you draw that image, it implies more, right? Like the second that has become concrete, it's like, wait, but what's that sword and where's it from? And who are the others like him or who are the others unlike him? Like it begs more questions, which is part of the fun of finally putting pen to paper and making something is all the implications of what it can now be, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. So when you guys are deep into this, is this something where it's just like, John, you're going to use your previs stuff and animate scenes Dan, my bad. I was looking right at Dan. Nobody else knew.
You're looking at me, but talking about Dan's skills.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's what happens. I get
not dance skills,
not dance, dance skills, not dance, dance skills. Skills. But Dan, is this something where you're going to use the skills that you have for that? And then John, are you going to be voice acting and doing that stuff? And do you have the animation chops that you used to have? Like what do you see down the road before this team swells into more than just twins?
Sure. You know, I mean, like
I'm determined at the moment. I mean, when I'm sitting there creating a lot of this, of course I can't help as I'm like thinking of the backstory and the lore and a lot of the events that are happening, I'm in my head already directing, you know, like sequences, shots, like literally it's like, okay, here's a close up. We're, you know, scraping along the ground and then camera comes up to reveal. And sometimes I just can't help but like think of it in that terms, even though we're just like in the beginning of just writing mythology. Mm-hmm. It's like,
which I think absolutely lends itself to being a director of some of these episodes.
Yeah, I would love to do that in the
future. I, you know, whenever I approach my own stuff, I don't think right away, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna voice work.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though everybody else around us are like, okay, and John, you're obviously gonna voice.
I'm
like, well, if it fits the character, sure. Do I sound like a lion tiger? Yes,
I happen to.
But I mean, meow. But yes. But even like, I mean, art wise, Dan has way more experience and has been in the art world for so long. There's many times I'm like, Dan, give me your version of Tygon. Give me your version of this kind of creature, like, you know, whatever it is. So we're kind of playing, you know, bouncing back and forth with what our strengths. Cause again, it comes back to that whole, there are strengths that he has that are my weaknesses and vice versa. But at the same time, you know, when we get talking creatively, when we're trying to write something, or it's like, it's yin, it's not yin and yang, it's yin and yang.
Right.
We're like, we're not really writers, and we're just talking over each other. Do take advantage of our twin powers, which is, I can start a sentence, I don't have to finish it because he already knows what I'm going to say. And so that helps, and it would probably drive people crazy when they're listening to us talk about these ideas.
Because you can talk in a shorthand,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, yeah.
You guys have worked professionally before in the past, but this talk to me about just what it's like just being brothers who love each other and love working together. Whoa. And, oh, I've seen it. and what it means to be able to work on a project like this versus like if you're just working with some other guys.
Well, I think this project in particular was the whole genesis was like, when I started drawing these Tygons, and I knew I want this world and aesthetic to come from, be a callback to the kind of stuff I created when I was in high school. And my drawing partner, my creative partner was Dan. So that's why I was like, yeah, it just makes sense.
Meaning if I'm going to be like mentioning some sort of like reference to another show or whatever, I know he's going to immediately get what I'm talking about. I don't have to sit there and try to over explain everything. It's like, okay, we're on the same page. He understands it. I understand it. We both get it.
I mean, it's great. We love it because we've always talked about, you know, making movies, you know, growing up and even in our adult years, and whether the opportunities either come or if we squandered them or different career paths and not having those opportunities, we're hoping we can make something out of this.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I think we're going to wrap things up here. So thanks for joining us. Before we close, any just kind of final thoughts on the project you work on or anything that you want to plug? Or
you guys have a website, right?
We do have a website. Yeah.
So we can put a link to our first Ninja Turtle.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we give them the Mikey Surfing Adventures?
Oh, that one?
Yeah. That's the only one we have.
That's the only one we have.
Yeah. So this is a comic that you
have? No. This is a stop motion animated turtle video that we made prior to
sweet.
Not the big 15-minute one. This was like our first
maybe a minute. So,
but it survived. We have it.
Yeah,
it survived.
Yeah.
And we will see the fast forward lines on this.
Oh,
please. Yeah, yeah.
So crazy.
And you'll also get some crappy voice work.
Oh yeah. Actually, our older brother, I think, did the voice.
Which I'm kind of glad because the 15-minute version was all us, and holy cow, it was bad. Oh, cracking voices, trying to do like Mikey and Donatello and all that stuff.
Oh man, we had everything.
But yeah. I don't. What was the question?
Just anything you want to plug. Anything you want to throw out? Any cool projects you guys are on or want to talk about?
Yeah, you can check. I mean, if you want to see the genesis of where these Tygons are coming from, you can go online. Theta.com is where those NFTs exist right now. I mean, you can probably Google
it. It's just initial taste of maybe what's to come.
We'll put some links in the description and all that stuff.
Order of the Tygons is the name of the kind of the website that has a lot of the artwork and even some of the back lore, which is, you know, kind of the sprinkling of the
beginning. Do you guys have much of a following on that site yet? Or
I don't even know. I'm not a tech guy. I never checked that. My other guys, you know, will say, hey, we've got people following us, so I take their word. But I have yet to come across a lot of people who are like, hey, man, love your work in Napoleon, but I especially love your Tygon work. I'm waiting to meet some more Tygon lovers. Yeah, you know, we'll see if that happens.
That's awesome.
They'll be showing up at the airport any day.
Sign my Tygon. Yeah. That would be great. I would love it. I would love to sign a Tygon as opposed to a Vogue for Pedro shirt. Just for once.
Just for once.
Seriously. That's the goal.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being here, guys. And we'll catch you. Well, we won't catch you next time. We'll catch the Mulligans next time on Mulling It Over. It.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Hey there. there, fellow adventurers. I am Jason Conforto.
And I'm Tyler Crump, and we are hosts of a podcast, Adventure AI, where we play Dungeons & Dragons with an AI named Alex the Language Lord.
I'm Alex the Language Lord. Join us as we craft epic tales together.
Do you want to learn how to use AI in your D&D campaign?
Or how AI can force you to do things that you don't want to do? Wait a second, we don't like that.
Look no further. Adventure AI is the podcast for all your AI-powered D&D adventures.
Alex the Language Lord not only comes up with campaigns for us,
he also helps us create our characters, create our backstories, and even give us some fun magical items.
And really takes all of the human aspects out of Dungeons & Dragons. So it's not really playing at all.
Follow Adventure AI on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.